This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Sam Lau here with Eric Dahl.
Hey, hey, hey.
Yeah, I like that extra hey. So as listeners probably, longtime listeners have probably noticed, but you've got a different intro here. We've got Jeff Mayberry out today, and we've got Mr. Dahl sitting in this place. But we're recording this episode of Monday Morning Minutes before the close on Thursday, April 14th. It's an early close today for the bond market, and tomorrow we have the NYSE is closed on Friday, April 15th, due to the observance of Good Friday. A little bit of trivia here: I'll note that this is the only non-federal holiday that's observed by the New York Stock Exchange as well as the bond market. The bond market actually is going to be closing here in about 54 minutes from right now, and then both will be closed tomorrow. So the NYSE, just to continue this trivia download here, is that the NYSE observes 10 holidays each year. The U.S. government, the federal government, observes 11, and then the bond market observes 12. So I guess you can call the bond geeks out there the slackers of the bunch. But the difference amongst all these different exchanges is that only the financial markets observe Good Friday, and only the government and bond markets observe Indigenous Peoples Day or Columbus Day, depending on how, your preference for referencing those days, as well as Veterans Day. And I'll just throw in the commodity market here, at least in the U.S., for good measure, using the CME as a proxy here. The CME does follow along with the New York Stock Exchange in terms of its observances for holidays each year. So also 10 holidays a year for the CME alongside the NYSE. So as I indicated at the outset here, we're testing out a new abbreviated format that we're gonna try out for the times that either Jeff Mayberry and I aren't aren't available to record these, given our kind of return to normalcy here. What we've seen is our travel schedules are beginning to pick up, so it might become a little bit more difficult to us to record each Friday. But we did want to continue this podcast through those periods as well. And also, you know, on the personal side, it was always a little bit difficult and challenging to make it back back to a laptop and something with consistent Wi-Fi to get on the recording while we were on vacation as well. So for this week, with Mayberry absent, we won't have a quote of the week section, but we do have Mr. Dahl, so maybe you get a little bit of upside there. And Eric, you know, you've been with the team for some time now, and you've made a few cameos on the Sherman Show, but since this is your first time on Monday Morning Minutes, why don't you give our listeners a quick introduction to who Eric Dahl is? You know, maybe you could tell our listeners, you know, how long you've been with DoubleLine, how long you've been with the team, what you do for us, your beverage of choice, your hobbies, and we'll go from there.
Absolutely. No problem. I'd like to start off by saying somebody's got to petition the NYSC to honor the U.S. veterans. You know, that's no respect right there.
No doubt.
Give them some love, but the NYSC just, you know, it's all about the money for them. Money never sleeps. So myself, I joined the team in 2012. In the fourth quarter of 2012, I started working with the cross asset team here at Double Line. So we're coming up on my 10-year anniversary. These guys have seen me grow, you know, from a young, precocious guy to what I am today. Right now, I'm a trader and quantitative analyst on the team. I help manage the portfolio exposures of our derivative-based strategies, our new equity ETF, trade that exposure, also help out with the team in the multi-sector fixed income space when we do our asset allocation changes and our kind of asset allocation strategies as well. So it's a pretty broad spectrum of stuff, but I really enjoy the macro area because it's exciting. You're having to track markets, commodities, bonds, stocks, and at the same time, you have to kind of find a way to stay centered amongst all of that movement and gyration. And in terms of on the personal level, I'm an adventurous guy. I am a motorcycle enthusiast, motorsports enthusiast. I have my pilot's license. I'm a bon vivant. I like to eat, drink, and make merry with my friends. Beverage of choice would probably be a whiskey from Scotland, from the island of Isla.
All right. So hopefully our listeners got a little flavor of what their doll's like out there. And I will note that we do have to revisit our motorcycling ways and get back out to on the road. Time, what was it, 5 years ago that we took a road trip and we rode our motorcycles out to Sturgis, South Dakota to celebrate that annual event was a great time. And I would also say that you used the word young and precocious. I guess precocious is a nicer way to describe your early days with our team here. I would have used the word obstinate or something like that. But we have seen improvement on that front. And just for the listeners out there who aren't familiar with what the cross asset team is, that is a team that's headed up by our WDCIO, Jeffrey Sherman, who I'm on the Sherman Show podcast with. It also includes myself, Mr. Mayberry, Mr. Dahl. And you've probably heard of us talk about Mr. Kimbrough, who's also made cameos on the Sherman Show, as well as helps us with the macro front. But with all this introduction, I'm going to jump into where we are in terms of where the markets. And looking across the screen right now, I see a lot of red. It seems like it's a familiar theme now. But with the S&P 500 at the time of this recording, it's down 1.6%. On a week-to-date basis, and I'm going to call it the year-to-date because it is a pretty big number thus far. It's down 7% for the year-to-date basis. This week, the S&P 500 is led by the materials and industrials sector. Materials up about 1.2% on the week, and industrials up just shy of that, up 0.75 on the week. And you know, perhaps that's a little bit on the commodity strength that we've been seeing this week as well. On the flip side, we have technology down almost 3 percentage points. A lot of that could be due to the fact that technology tends to be what we call a longer duration asset. It's a little bit more sensitive to adverse movements or sensitive to moves in rates. And with the adverse rate move that we've seen this week, we've seen technology as well as other growth sectors down on the week. I'm looking at the Russell 1000 growth, that's down about 2.5%. Versus the Russell 1000 value, which is down 80 basis points on the week-to-date basis. And one other note, since we're talking about U.S. equities here, I will say that earnings season kicks off this week. So a bunch of financials reported today. Compliance reasons, I'm not going to call out any names. But I am interested, as the earnings season progresses, I am interested in hearing some forward-looking guidance about their expectations for their business lines, respective business lines, given the impact of Fed policy as well as inflation on their corporate outlooks there. Moving over to fixed income land, looking at the two-year yield, I see that last week it broke through 2.5% to close that last Friday at 2.51, but it doesn't look like it could hold on to that yield, at least through where we are right now. Looks like the yield is down 8 basis points or so, and now it's sitting at just about 2.45 on the two-year yield. The 10-year Treasury yield had a big gap up. It closed last week at 2.70, Right now it's at 280. So that's 10 basis points over last week. And as I look at the Bloomberg right now, 270 was also yesterday's closing yield. So this 10 basis point move on the week is the same for what we've just seen on the day. But that's a really big move there. But it is an early close today for the bond market. So this is likely on light volume, but definitely big moves on an intraday basis as well as a week nonetheless. And then on the long bond, the yield is up 19 basis points. We're sitting at a yield of 290 at the time of this recording. So what does that mean for the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate? The ag, let's just call it, is down over a point at the time of this recording for the week to date. And I got to call out the year-to-date number because this is just another eye blinker. It's down almost 8.5% on a year-to-date basis. This is the worst start to the year for the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate going back to 1988. The actual returns go back farther than that, but further than that. But we go back to 1988 because I believe that's when it began. We began being able to see daily returns versus monthly returns, which preceded that. So going back to 1988, the aggregate is off to its worst start. And I would also say for those 60/40 portfolio passive investors out there, this is also the worst start to the year for 60/40 portfolios when you take a look at it in combination with the S&P 500 and the Bloomberg Ag. So tough start to the year for those in the season, tough start to the year for those who are purely in 60% U.S. equities and 40% bonds via those indices.
One thing I'd say there, Sam, is very strangely, right now, the 60/40 portfolio, the bonds, supposed to be your ballast, are just really sinking your ship a little bit.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, with the ballast, it's like, it's weird with all these negative numbers out here. This feels very different than what we saw in 2020. I would say a lot of this weakness has, for the most part, been relatively orderly versus the disorderly sell-off that we had back in 2020 when there's panic. So while I agree with the ballast to the portfolio, I'm not sure if we're getting that true kind of flight to safety type of feel with this weakness yet. A lot of this feels like it has to do with the inflation and the Fed moves there. So if you want to own duration, you know, we like to say, you know, you just own treasuries. That's the true flight to safety type of quality. Right here, it seems like the ag is really being driven down both by the duration side as well as, you know, that IG corporate credit space. So let's see. I mean, if there's a true risk off event that really impacts you know, the U.S. economy, especially, you know, we'll see if the ag actually kicks into that bond side of the portfolio.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, the fact that we've gone through a very tumultuous first quarter with both geopolitical conflict and inflation and Federal Reserve policy and global central bank policy changing, and yet bonds still, you know, aren't the flight to safety. I do think that's indicative of what you were describing of a more orderly sort of a sell-off that has to do with the fundamentals of prices in the market and inflation rather than fear and panic.
Yeah, and I think part of that we can see too, and when we look at the various components of the bond market too, I mean, you look at the sectors that are performing the worst, it is those higher duration assets, you know, the IG corporate credit, you've got the U.S. Treasury and agency MBS. Then on the flip side, outperforming those traditional sectors, you got the non-traditional sectors based on these indices that we look at, bank loans and high yield corporate credit that are faring much better. Bank loans, of course, have that floating rate component that have that advantage, and thus bank loans are the best performer year to date, down just under a point for bank loans, and on the week it's down about half a point. But that's a big difference versus IG corporate credit, which is down over 12 percentage points on the year-to-date basis. So moving on to the other parts, it seems like we have somewhat of a recurring theme of late, where the S&P, as you point out, you know, the S&P 500 and the bonds both down on a week-to-date basis. We've seen, you know, commodity markets outperform during that period of time with with positive prints. So on a week-to-date basis, again, we've got the Bloomberg Commodity Index up over 4% from where we are now. Looking within there, I see WTI crude oil up at 105. I mean, we were talking about the volatility in this futures market for WTI crude before we jumped on this podcast, Eric. I said that it was down to 102 earlier in the morning. Now it's at 105.43 for the front month contract of WTI crude oil. And then as I'm looking at the screen here, I recall that President Biden made the announcement of the release of the 180 million barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve over the next 6 months. But he made that announcement on March 31st, 2022. At that time, a barrel WTI crude oil was $100 a barrel, and today it stands over 105. So it doesn't seem like that relief to U.S. consumers and, you know, through the derivatives, the distillates that people pump into their cars has really helped yet. It's up 5% over that time of the announcement. So a lot of that underlying issue that we've been talking about with supply, we also have the geopolitical risk that that you just mentioned before, has been a longstanding conversation piece here, at least on the Monday morning minutes with the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the humanitarian crisis that's come with it. But it's going to take a little bit more than just, it seems like, that coordinated release of crude from various reserves throughout the world to kind of put a bigger dent into the price of crude here. Then let's see, looking over at gold hasn't made its way above 2000 yet, but it is up almost 2% on the week to close, or not to close, but as of this point, we're at 19, just $1,974 a troy ounce of gold. And then finally, looking over at Bitcoin is below 40,000 now. We haven't been here in some time, but it's down about 7% on the week. We're at $39,900 a Bitcoin for that market, to bring the year-to-date performance for Bitcoin to down 14%. So that's where we are in terms of the markets. Dahl, do you want to give us a rundown on what happened in the macro front this week?
Yeah, absolutely. The only last thing I'd say about the markets is, looking at bonds and stocks down, the commodity market's the one place where an investor who put some capital to work there could have diversified their portfolio. And, you know, like I've been taught and learned through the bloodless verdicts of the market over the years, is diversification is the only free lunch in the investment business. So with that.
Yeah, it's one of those things that Mayberry and I also hit on, you know, time and time again, because, you know, though, it's like we always hear these questions. It's like, why should I even own this, you know, sector of the, or this asset class within financial markets? All it does is go down when my S&P 500 goes up. You know, why own bonds? Why own commodities? Why own this? Why own that? But, you know, like you said, it's the free lunch out there. You might not like everything that comes on your plate, but, you know, if you eat it all, you get that wholesome meal, right? You might get all your however, how is it, four or five food groups out there, and you might not have the taste of it, but you get full off of it, right?
Yeah, and you have to stay balanced, absolutely. And that's the thing. Unless you're Nostradamus and you know the future, you should diversify your portfolio.
That's absolutely. And, you know, that up 33% on the BCOM year to date definitely is, you know, is something that's helping people's portfolios, for those who have owned it, you know, those who have held it. You know, it's one of those things that when you take a look at your statements each month, if you've got that commodity position, you might see some green on your overall portfolio level.
Absolutely. And I mean, the prices have moved significantly, so maybe the entry point isn't as attractive, but the carry is still pretty phenomenal in commodities right now. So even for new investors, it's something to consider as part of your portfolio.
And by carry, you know, we did do, you know, listeners, you know, maybe we can put the timestamp down on our Twitter descriptions, but the carry that Dahl's talking about, it can come from two fronts. We're actually, you know, with commodity investing, you can get the carry off of the collateral from treasuries, T-bills, where you can also get the carry from the rolling of commodity futures that we've talked about in the past. So, I'm going to do a shout out to Lauren Fleckenstein, who helps us with our tweets and descriptions and other verbiage around these for listeners here. Perhaps I can put this timestamp out on that particular commodities episode that Mayberry and I did in the past. But with that, let's kick it off on the macro front, Dalt.
Yeah, I think that's a good segue because the topic of the week is prices, and price action has been increasing, unfortunately, for the consumer. The headline CPI increased 8.5% year over year from 7.9% last month, the highest reading since 1981. I mean, that's a big move. That's over 40 years. Many people alive didn't experience inflation like that until now. The core CPI also increased to 6.5% year over year, the highest since 1982. And kind of digging deeper into those readings, the biggest drivers in March were energy, as expected. You know, people feel that pain at the pump. You know, there's a musician out there named Ice-T who put a little rhyme together saying he got robbed by pump number 9. You know, the gasoline pump these days is really a one-armed bandit hurting the consumer. Another big area of increase was airline fares. And if you're looking at it from a year-over-year perspective, food, energy, used vehicles, new vehicles, lodging, away from home, hotels, airfare, all of those things are kind of part of both the return to life after the pandemic, plus the supply chain disruptions, plus the kind of geopolitical conflict. So it's a real kind of whirlwind of things, increasing prices across the board. And I personally don't see it abating anytime soon. I just read an article that Taiwan Semiconductor, which makes over 50% of the advanced chips, they fully expect businesses to overbuy to try and kind of build up a war chest of chips, so to speak. But that's not going to help solve the supply chain problems. As Sam mentioned earlier, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve release, that may kind of incrementally put more crude in refineries, but the refineries are the bottleneck that has to produce gasoline for consumers to use. So it's a pretty ugly situation out there from a CPI standpoint.
Yeah, you brought up a lot of good points there, Dahl. One thing I also mentioned is, you know, with that CPI, along the lines of CPI, is a lot of these parts of the market, you know, the naysayers on inflation have been saying that it's just going to be transitory, the Fed included, until they retired that word. But, you know, one of the things that we look at and we've been talking about on this podcast is the stickier nature of shelter. And shelter being a big component of the CPI, roughly a third, just under a third of the overall headline index, that continues to climb. I mean, it's up 5% on a year-over-year basis. And that's the highest level that on a year-over-year basis for the shelter component going back to 1991. And we're starting to see that pick up, and it continues to move forward. So that part is, you know, underlying what you said earlier, where you don't see this, expect this to abate, you know, in the short term. This is one of those arguments for stickier inflation going forward, is just that shelter component. One other note, you brought up the SPR again. Don't forget that as we talk about, and we've questioned whether or not we can actually get to that 180 million barrels, which equates to about a million barrels a day. I think the max capacity for the SPR releases 3 million barrels a day, but it's never been tested at that capacity. And if it, you know, the times that it gets close, it definitely hasn't been, the spigots haven't been that open on a continuous basis for 6 months. I don't think that the underlying infrastructure can handle that. You know, it needs to be maintained pretty consistently. So, you know, 6 months, a million barrels a day, I don't know if it's going to get there. But more importantly, if we do get there, don't forget, you have to resupply that strategic petroleum reserve. If we drop it by 180 million barrels overall, that gets us to a total inventory level somewhere around 400 million barrels, which brings us back to the 1980s. you know, that type of inventory level. So at some point, they're going to have to repurchase and resupply that reserve in order for it to work, to act as coverage for periods like this where there's a shortage of oil, or there's wars, or there's some other reason for oil prices to spike. We want to have that reserve in place. And if they want to have that in place, then they're going to have to repurchase it. And hopefully, you know, I mean, not hopefully, but it is going to create more demand for oil. And hopefully it doesn't happen at even higher prices than what we're at now. And then finally, while you were talking there, I did look up when we had that episode of Monday Morning Minutes regarding the carry in commodity futures. That was on January 14th, 2022. And that's episode 48, if listeners want to go back to that.
Great. Yeah, I mean, I think you bring up a good point regarding housing. You know, the Federal Reserve likes to look at their favorite measure of inflation, PCE, ex food and energy. But the things people really care about are a roof over their head, food in their stomach, and the ability to get to their job and see their family. So, like, those are the most important things for most people. And then healthcare, obviously, or naturally, I should say. So it isn't a pretty situation. And the PPI came out on Wednesday. And unfortunately, the final demand there was up 1.4% month over month. And that brought the year over year to 11.2% growth, which is the highest for the series. And that ties back to that comment I made about Taiwan Semiconductor, you know, expecting their clients to purchase and stockpile chips. And I think you see that across the supply chain where this inflation narrative is getting into consumers' mindsets, and it's getting into logistics professionals' mindsets at companies. Like, if prices are going to be higher in the future, you're probably going to want to try and hedge that risk by buying more today. But then that creates the vicious cycle of price rises. And so it is a kind of loop that we're trapped in right now. And the Federal Reserve has been backed into a corner where they're going to be hiking rates pretty aggressively. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. And that could, you know, unfortunately, cause a slowdown or contraction in the U.S. economy. But that's where we are right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Fed is really going to have to thread that needle when they're playing tug of war between fighting inflation and keeping the economy firing on most of its cylinders.
Yeah, they're definitely going to have to deactivate some of their cylinders if they want to try and cool things off a little bit. You know, even James Bullard, the St. Louis Fed president, came out this week and said that there's a bit of a fantasy, I think, in current policy in central banks. And, unquote, neutral is not putting downward pressure on inflation. It's just ceasing to put upward pressure on inflation. And I think the reading in between the lines there, what he's saying is the neutral rate according to the Fed is somewhere around 2 to 2.5%. Well, we're way off of that. So the Fed has to get rates way up quickly in order to just even get to neutral. And we're above neutral. So I think from an interest rate perspective, people have to be wary of higher rates to come quickly.
Yeah. And I think that's just fear. And it's going to be the loathing pretty soon. I mean, if not more than where we are now with what some of the stuff that we've been talking about, the fixed income markets, as well as the equity markets here.
Yep. Like one positive note was retail sales gained 0.5% in March. It was under consensus, which was 0.6%. February was revised up to 0.8% from 0.3%. So That kind of leaves you in a situation where year over year retail sales have kind of decelerated to 6.9%, but they're still positive, which is kind of indicative of that consumer mentality of buying now because prices are going up. I think one thing to note is if you look at the retail sales report for March, the biggest gain was gasoline stations at 8.9% up. So some of those gains are just going to the pockets of gasoline station owners, you know, and it's actually a net drag on consumption of things that might be a more of a net boost to the economy. And then kind of rounding out the macro for the week, we have the initial jobless claims report for the week of April 8th. That increased to 185K, which is still a relatively low number. That's up from last week's print of 167K, which was the second lowest ever other than 1968. So I think the labor market is still in a really strong position. Just anecdotally, I know people across the social spectrum, across the industry spectrum, that jobs are plentiful right now. And I think that's another one of the inflation demons, if you will, that the Fed is going to have to fight. They don't want to say it, but to tame inflation, they're going to have to tame the labor market. And to tame the labor market, they're going to have to cause unemployment to rise. So it's kind of a tough spot they're in from my point of view.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing is right now our unemployment rate is at the second strongest level going back to 1978, and we're at 3.6% on the headline unemployment rate. It was 3.5, I want to say, February of 2020, it hit 3.5 right before the pandemic really wiped out the economy. But prior to that, I want to say, if memory serves, it's the lowest going back to 1978. So I think that's some of the ammunition, the fuel that the Fed has to give them that optimism to think that they can thread this needle. But as we always say, there's quite a bit of hubris, I think, within that. And the fact that they're even talking about neutral rates as if they actually can come up with that fine line between pinpointing the neutral rate where the economy neither grows nor shrinks, you know, to get to that level, that just shows me the hubris that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. And to kind of wrap things up with a few points of Fed speak, Reserve Governor Christopher Waller said the economy could handle aggressive policy tightening. And he says, I prefer a front-loading approach. So a 50 basis point hike in May would be consistent with that, and possibly more in June and July. So I think that he's kind of setting things up for a 50 basis point hike at the next meeting, and then more of those to come. That might become the new kind of hiking size that they prefer in this environment. The 25 basis point thing was just, they didn't want to spook the market with the 50. So they're really setting up the market for a 50 basis point hikes in the future with the Fed speak that's being released currently.
Yeah, that's always the thing that, you know, they need to do. I think they actually, it's safe to say that they need to do if they want to massage this economy going forward. It's just this forward-looking guidance, I think they found that it works. You know, you get the FOMC presser that comes out, and then after that, if you have any changes in terms of the way you're thinking about monetary policy going forward, you put the talking heads out there. You know, you'll notice that a lot of times the big news intra meetings don't come from Powell, but they come from people like Bowler. They come from people like Waller, who just go out there and test the sentiment and see how the market reacts. And if things go well and the market gets a little desensitized to what's being said, then, you know, they begin to have more footing to implement it in the subsequent meetings. And then in that last meeting in March, if they had just thrown out 50 basis points, I think it definitely would have spooked the markets, on top of the fact that they were probably considering the impact of again, that Russian invasion of Ukraine that happened earlier and preceded the FOMC meeting in March.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's just so many variables right now. I do not envy the seat of Jerome Powell, because the soft landing is going to be incredibly difficult. He had better be a master pilot from the U.S. Air Force test pilot school if he wants to pull that one off. He had better have the right stuff. I have my fingers crossed for him, but it's going to be a tough job. One last Fed speak point, and then we'll kind of pass it off to Lyle for things to keep an eye on for next week. Richmond Fed President Thomas Barkin similarly put out some verbiage saying the best short-term path for us is to move rapidly to the neutral rate. Once again, move rapidly to the neutral rate. That to me is saying they really want to get the rates up over 2% quickly.
Yeah, that just speaks to me of hubris again. So with that, let's move on to the things to keep an eye on. We do have a kind of a light week next week. On Wednesday, April 20th, we have the eponymous Beige Book. it's for named for the color of the actual book that the Fed releases. It doesn't seem to be much of a market driver, but Mr. Kimbrough does favor this. It does have a lot of data for people that want to get into the details on what the Fed may be looking at. That's your spot. And then on Thursday, we have leading economic indicators for March. And on that, we have a month over month of 1.1% that's rolling off with this new print. And if the estimate on the upcoming month over month is correct at plus 30 basis points, then we should settle right around 6.8% on the LDI year over year versus a current of 7.6. So while it's moving down, the trend is continues down on that downward path. It is still positive. I noticed in yesterday's multi-asset growth macro meeting that we have on a weekly basis that the MAG team, as we use for the acronym, started to dust off their early recession indicators. And this is something we haven't really looked at since around 2019, 2020 or so, as we started to see the yield curve flatten going into 2019 and even invert for a few months prior to the pandemic. But with that, the LDI is definitely one of those early indicators. And the good news with this is it tends to take a slow, gradual path. And on its way right now, we see that the trend has been down, but it still is very positive. So keep an eye on that one, folks. But as of right now, it doesn't look like it's signaling any type of recession in the imminent future. And then also on Thursday, something to watch here. We do have Jerome Powell and Christine Lagarde. Both of them are taking part on a International Monetary Fund panel on the global economy. So that's something that could come out with some big news there, but we'll see how each one of those central bank heads are thinking and see if there's any type of coordination between their parts there. And then finally, on Friday, we have the old market with the IIP PMIs that has been renamed the S&P Global Manufacturing Index right now, and it's the preliminary numbers for April. And that's looking to shake out at 58.0, so well in expansionary territory, but down slightly from the 58.8 that we had the previous month. There's no estimate out yet, as it is a bit early for that, for the services component, but then we also remain that, we expect that to also remain in positive territory for that next print. Definitely expect to see some firm expansion from the manufacturing as well as the services side. So with that, I wanted to say give a big thanks to Mr. Eric Dahl today for joining in and taking place of Mr. Mayberry while he's playing hooky and hopefully enjoying his vacation. Prior to this podcast, Dahl had asked me how he should think about the approach on here. And I basically just said that, you know, just think about us having a conversation on the desk like we used to when we weren't on the virtual desk, where we just used to banter back and forth as we saw various moves in the marketplace and we saw various economic data prints come out and how the market would react. And overall, I think he delivered. So, Dahl, thank you for that. And I also
for having me.
Yeah, hopefully you had fun. Hopefully you had a good time. I wouldn't even say that you're on training wheels on this one. We had high expectations and we knew you could deliver, and I think you definitely did. So, you know, hopefully, you know, depending on the frequency, I know me and Mayberry have a pretty jam-packed travel schedule coming up in, you know, perhaps as early as the late part of May, maybe in June. But as you step up with this, you know, maybe you know, we could think about doing some topic or questions of the week. So thanks again for that. I want to thank all of our listeners out there again for listening to us today on Monday Morning Minutes. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already so you don't miss an episode. And you can pick up each episode on Mondays before the bell rings. And we are available on your favorite podcast platforms. And if we aren't, just hit us up on email at minutes@doubleline.com, or you can hit us up on the Twitter at @DLineMinutes to send us your questions, comments, and suggestions.
Yeah, and you can find more information about DoubleLine at our website, doubleline.com. And also don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/DoubleLineCapital. Another thing, the Sherman Show is an excellent place where Sherman and Lau discuss financial markets with different luminaries and people from the global financial markets. And it's very insightful and interesting and entertaining as well. Sam and Jeff are going to be talking corporate credit with our very own Robert Cohen. And Dr. Cohen's an interesting character. I always enjoy conversations with him. He has a unique point of view, and I'm sure it'll be a pretty interesting conversation there for all the listeners. So please follow Sherman and Sam on Twitter at Sherman Show Pod. Hope everyone has a great week. Thanks for listening to me on my first episode of your Monday Morning Minutes.
Yeah, thanks everyone, and good luck out there.
This audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media at doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by the listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person or a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk. Securities mentioned are not a recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell. These securities were chosen based on their active overweights within the representative portfolio to explain portfolio positioning and the forward-looking view of the market that drives such positioning. For the preceding year, beginning August 24th, 2021, a list of all positions is available by request at media@doubleline.com. Equities may decline in value due to both real and perceived general market, economic, and industry conditions.